This is Audible.
This is Indigo Ridge, written by Devney Perry, narrated by Jason Clark and Vanessa Edwin.
Prologue. Think you'll fly, little bird? A voice, a nightmare, whispered across the wind. The rocks at the base of this sable cliff glowed silver as they caught the moonlight. A darkness so black and infinite began to pull its tether on my ankle as I took one step toward the edge. Would it hurt, flying? Let's find out. Chapter 1. Winslow. Could I get another? The bartender didn't slow as he passed by. Drink? I muttered, slumping forward. Pops had told me that this bar was where the locals hung out. Not only was it within walking distance of my new house in case I decided not to drive, but I was a local now. As of today, I lived in Quincy, Montana. I'd told the bartender as much when I'd asked for his wine list. He'd raised one bushy white eyebrow above his narrowed gaze, and I'd abandoned my thirst for a glass of Cabernet, ordering a vodka tonic instead. It had zapped every ounce of my willpower not to request a lemon twist. The ice cubes in my glass clinked together as I swirled around my pink plastic straw. The bartender ignored that sound, too. Main Street had two bars, tourist traps this time of year, according to Pops, but I regretted not choosing one of those to celebrate my first night in Quincy. Given his attitude, the bartender, who must have thought I was a lost tourist, regretted my decision, too. Willie's was a dive bar and not exactly my scene. The bartenders downtown probably acknowledged their customers, and the prices were listed on a menu, not delivered using three fingers on one wrinkled hand. He looked about as old as this dark, dingy building. Like most small-town Montana bars, the walls were teeming with beer signs and neon lights. Shelves stacked with liquor bottles lined the mirrored wall across from my seat. The room was cluttered with tables, every chair empty. Willie's was all but deserted this Sunday night at 9 o'clock. The locals must know of a better place to unwind. The only other patron was a man sitting at the farthest end of the bar, in the last stool down the line. He'd come in 10 minutes after I'd arrived and chosen the seat as far from me as possible. He and the bartender were nearly carbon copies of one another, with the same white hair and scraggly beards. Twins? They looked old enough to have established this bar. Maybe one of them was Willie himself. The bartender caught me staring. I smiled and rattled the ice in my glass. His mouth pursed in a thin line, but he made me another drink. And like with the first, he delivered it without a word, holding up the same three fingers. I twisted to reach into my purse, fishing out another five because clearly starting a tab was out of the question. But before I could pull the bill from my wallet, a deep, rugged voice caressed the room.
Hey, Willie. Griffin.
The bartender nodded. So he was Willie. And he could speak.
Usual?
Willie asked.
Yep.
The man with the incredible voice, Griffin, pulled out the stool two down from mine. As his tall, broad body eased into the seat, a whiff of his scent carried my way. Leather and wind and spice filled my nose, chasing away the musty air from the bar. It was heady and alluring. He was the type of man who turned a woman's head. One glimpse at his profile and the cocktail in front of me was unnecessary. Instead, I drank this man in head to toe. The sleeves of his black t-shirt stretched around his honed biceps and molded to the planes of his shoulders as he leaned his elbows on the bar. His brown hair was finger-combed and curled at the nape of his neck. His tan forearms were dusted with the same dark hair, and a vein ran over the corded muscle beneath. Even seated, I could tell his legs were long, his thighs thick like the evergreen tree trunks from the forests outside of town. Frayed hems of his faded jeans brushed against his black cowboy boots. And as he shifted in his seat, I caught the glimmer of a silver and gold belt buckle at his waist. If his voice, his scent, and that chiseled jaw hadn't been enough to make my mouth go dry, that buckle would have done it. One of my mom's favorite movies had been Legends of the Fall. She'd let me watch it at 16, and we'd cried together. Whenever I missed her, I'd put it on. The DVD was scratched, and the clasp on the case was broken because I'd watched that movie countless times simply because it had been hers. She'd always swooned over Brad Pitt as a sexy cowboy. If she could see Griffin, she'd be drooling too. Though he was missing the hat and the horse, this guy was every cowboy fantasy come to life. Lifting my glass to my mouth, I sipped the cold drink and tore my gaze from the handsome stranger. The vodka burned my throat and the alcohol rushed to my head. Well, Willie mixed his cocktails strong. I was unabashedly staring. It was rude and obvious. Yet when I set the glass down, my gaze immediately returned to Griffin. His piercing blue eyes were waiting. My breath hitched. Willie set down a tumbler full of ice and caramel liquid in front of Griffin, then, without giving him the fingers to pay, walked away. Griffin took a single swallow of his drink, his Adam's apple bobbing. Then his attention was on me once more. The intensity of his gaze was as intoxicating as my cocktail. He stared without hesitation. He stared with bold desire. His gaze raked down my black tank top to the ripped jeans I'd put on this morning before checking out of my hotel in Bozeman. I'd spent 4.5 hours driving to Quincy with a U-Haul trailer hitched to my Dodge Durango. When I'd arrived, I'd immediately jumped into unloading, only braking to meet Pops for dinner. I was a mess after a day of hauling boxes. My hair was in a ponytail, and whatever makeup I'd put on this morning had likely worn off. Yet the appreciation in Griffin's gaze sent a wave of desire rushing to my core. "Hi," I blurted. "Smooth, Wynn." His eyes twinkled like two perfect sapphires set behind long, sooty lashes.
"Hi."
"I'm Wynn." I held out a hand over the space between us.
"Griffin."
The moment his warm, calloused palm grazed mine, tingles cascaded across my skin like fireworks. A shiver rolled down my spine. Holy hell. There was enough electricity between us to power the jukebox in the corner. I focused on my drink, gulping more than sipping. The ice did nothing to cool me down. When was the last time I'd been this attracted to a man? Years. It had been years. Even then, it paled in comparison to 5 minutes beside Griffin.
"Where are you from?"
he asked. Like Willie, he must have assumed I was a tourist, too. "Bozeman," he nodded.
"I went to college at Montana State."
"Go Bobcats." I lifted my drink in a salute. Griffin returned the gesture, then put the rim of his glass to his full lower lip. I was staring again, unashamed. Maybe it was the angular cheekbones that set his face apart. Maybe it was the straight nose with a slight bump at the bridge, or his dark, bold brow bone. He was no ordinary handsome man. Griffin was drop-dead gorgeous. And if he was at Willie's, a local. Local meant off-limits. Damn. I swallowed my disappointment with another gulp of vodka. The scrape of stool legs rang through the room as he moved to take the seat beside mine. His arms returned to the bar, his drink between them as he leaned forward. He sat so close, his body so large, that the heat from his skin seeped into mine.
"Wynn. I like that name."
"Thanks." My full name was Winslow, but very few people ever called me anything other than Wynn or Winnie. Willie walked by and narrowed his eyes at the sliver of space between Griffin and me. Then he joined his doppelganger. "Are they related?" I asked, dropping my voice.
"Willie Sr. is on our side of the bar. His son is mixing drinks."
"Father and son? Huh. I thought twins. Does Willie Sr. have the same glowing personality as Willie Jr.?"
"It's worse,"
Griffin chuckled.
"Every time I come through town, he gets crankier."
"Wait, did that mean you don't live in town?"
"No."
He shook his head, picking up his drink. I did the same, hiding my smile in the glass. So he wasn't a local, which meant flirting was harmless. Bless you, Quincy. 100 personal questions raced through my mind, but I dismissed them all. Skylar used to criticize me for going into interrogation mode within 10 minutes of meeting someone new. One of many critiques. He'd used his profession as a life coach as an excuse to tell me anything and everything I'd been doing wrong in our relationship, in life. Meanwhile, he'd betrayed me, so I wasn't listening to Skylar's voice anymore. But I still wasn't going to bombard this man with questions. He didn't live here, and I'd save my questions for the people who did. My constituents. Griffin looked to the far end of the room and the empty shuffleboard table.
Want to play a game?
Sure. I've never played before.
It's easy.
He slid off his stool, moving with a grace that men his size didn't normally possess. I followed, eyes glued to the best ass I had ever seen. And he didn't live here. An imaginary choir perched in the bar's dusty rafters gave a collective yee-haw. Griffin went to one end of the table while I walked to the other.
Okay, Wynn. Loser buys the next round of drinks.
Good thing I had cash. Okay. Griffin spent the next 10 minutes explaining the rules and demonstrating how to slide the pucks down the sand-dusted surface toward the point lines. Then we played, game after game. After one more round, we both stopped drinking, but neither of us made a move to leave. I won some games. I lost most. And when Willie finally announced that he was closing at 1, the two of us walked outside to the darkened parking lot. A dusty black truck was parked beside my Durango.
That was fun.
It was. I smiled up at Griffin, my cheeks pinching. I hadn't had this much fun openly flirting with a man in, well, ever. I slowed my steps because the last place I wanted to go was home alone. He must have had the same idea because his boots stopped on the pavement. He inched closer. Winslow Covington didn't have one-night stands. I'd been too busy wasting years on the wrong man. Griffin wasn't the right man either, but I'd learned in my time as a cop that sometimes it wasn't about choosing right from wrong. It was choosing the right wrongs. Griffin. Tonight, I chose Griffin. So I closed the distance between us and stood on my toes, letting my hands snake up his hard, flat stomach. He was tall, standing 2 or 3 inches over 6 feet. At 5'9", it was refreshing to be around a man who towered over me. I lifted a hand to his neck, pulling him down until his mouth hovered over mine. Is that your truck? Shit. I cursed at the clock, then flew into action, flinging the covers off my naked body and racing for the bathroom. Late was not how I wanted to start the first day of my new job. I flipped on the shower, my head pounding as I stepped under the cold spray and let out a yelp. There was no time to wait for hot water, so I shampooed my hair and put in some conditioner while I scrubbed Griffin's scent off my skin. I'd mourn the loss of it later. There was an ache between my legs that I'd think about later, too. Last night had been mind-blowing, toe-curling, the best night I'd ever had with a man. Griffin knew exactly how to use that powerful body of his, and I'd been the lucky recipient of 3, or had it been 4, orgasms. I shuddered and realized the water was hot. Damn it. Shoving thoughts of Griffin out of my head, I hurried out of the shower, frantically swiping on makeup and willing the blow dryer to work faster. Without time to curl or straighten my hair, I twisted it into a tight bun at the nape of my neck, then dashed to the bedroom to get dressed. The mattress rested on the floor, the sheets and blankets rumpled and strewn everywhere. Thankfully, before I'd headed to the bar last night, I'd searched for bedding in the boxes and laid it out. When I'd finally gotten home after hours spent in the back of Griffin's truck, I'd practically face-planted into my pillows and forgotten to set my alarm. I refused to regret Griffin. Kicking off my new life in Quincy with a hot and wild night seemed a little bit like fate, serendipity. Maybe on his next trip through town, we'd bump into each other. But if not, well, I didn't have time for the distraction of a man, especially not today. Oh God, please don't let me be late. I rifled through a suitcase, finding a pair of dark wash jeans. Pops had told me specifically not to show up at the station looking fancy. The jeans were slightly wrinkled, but there was no time to find whatever box had stolen my iron. Besides, an iron meant fancy. The simple white tee I found next was also wrinkled, so I dug for my favorite black blazer to hide the worst offenders. Then I hopped into my favorite black boots with the chunky heels before jogging for the door, swiping up my purse from where I'd dumped it on the living room floor. The sun was shining, the air was clean, the sky was blue, and I had no time to appreciate a minute of my first Quincy, Montana morning as I ran to the Durango parked in my driveway. I slid behind the wheel, started the engine, and cursed again at the clock on the dash. 8:02. I'm late. Thankfully, Quincy wasn't Bozeman, and the drive from one side of town to the police station on the other took exactly 6 minutes. I pulled into the lot and parked next to a familiar blue Bronco and let myself take a single deep breath. I can do this job. Then I got out of my car and walked to the station's front door, hoping with every step I looked okay. One disdaining look from the officer stationed behind a glass partition at the front desk, and I knew I'd gotten it wrong. Shit. His gray hair was cut short, high, and tight in a military style. He looked me up and down, the wrinkles on his face deepening with a scowl. That glare likely had nothing to do with my outfit, and everything to do with my last name. "Good morning," I plastered on a bright smile, crossing the small lobby to his workspace. "I'm Winslow Covington."
"The new chief, I know,"
he muttered. My smile didn't falter. I'd win them over, eventually. That's what I'd told Pops last night when he'd had me over for dinner after I'd returned the U-Haul. I'd win them all over, one by one. Most people were bound to think that the only reason I'd gotten the job as the Quincy chief of police was because my grandfather was the mayor. Yes, he would be my boss. But there wasn't a nepotism clause for city employees, probably because in a town this size, everyone was likely related in some manner. If you added too many restrictions, no one would be able to get a job. Besides, Pops hadn't hired me. He could have, but instead, he'd put together a search committee so that there'd be more than one voice in the decision. Walter Covington was the fairest, most honorable man I'd ever known. And granddaughter or not, what mattered was my performance. He'd taken the cues from the community, and though my grandfather loved me completely, he wouldn't hesitate to fire me if I screwed this up. He'd told me as much the day he'd hired me. He'd reminded me again last night.
"The mayor is waiting in your office,"
the officer said, pushing the button to buzz me into the door beside his cubicle. "It was nice to meet you." I glanced at the silver nameplate on his black uniform. "Officer Smith?" His response was to ignore me completely, turning his attention to his computer screen. I'd have to win him over another day. Or maybe he'd be open to an early retirement. I pushed through the door that led into the heart of the station. I'd been here twice, both times during the interview process. But it was different now as I walked through the bullpen, no longer a guest. This was my bullpen. The officers looking up from their desks were under my charge. My stomach clenched. Staying up all night having sex with a stranger probably hadn't been the smartest way to prepare for my first day.
"Winnie,"
Pops came out of what would be my office, his hand extended. He seemed taller today, probably because he was dressed in nice jeans and a starched shirt instead of the ratty t-shirt, baggy jeans, and suspenders I'd seen him in yesterday. Pops was fit for his 71 years, and though his hair was a thick silver, his 6'3 frame was as strong as an ox. He was in better shape than most men my age, let alone his. I shook his hand, glad that he hadn't tried to hug me. "Morning. Sorry I'm late."
"I just got here myself."
He leaned in closer and dropped his voice.
"You doing okay?"
"Nervous," I whispered. He gave me a small smile.
"You'll do great."
I could do this job. I was 30 years old, 2 decades below the median age of a person in this position, 4 decades younger than my predecessor had been when he'd retired. The former chief of police had worked in Quincy for his entire career, moving up the ranks and acting as chief for as long as I'd been alive. But that was why Pops had wanted me in this position. He said Quincy needed fresh eyes and younger blood. The town was growing, and with it, their problems. The old ways weren't cutting it. The department needed to embrace technology and new processes. When the former chief had announced his retirement, Pops had encouraged me to toss my name into the hat. By some miracle, the hiring committee had chosen me. Yes, I was young, but I met the minimum qualifications. I'd worked for 10 years with the Bozeman Police Department. During that time, I'd earned my bachelor's degree and a position as detective within their department. My record was impeccable, and I'd never left a case unclosed. Maybe my welcome would have been warmer if I were a man, but that had never scared me, and it certainly wasn't going to today. I can do this job. I would do this job.
Let me introduce you to Janice.
He nodded for me to follow him into my office, where we spent the morning with Janice, my new assistant. She'd worked for the former chief for 15 years, and the longer she spoke, the more I fell in love with her. Janice had spiky gray hair and the cutest pair of red-framed glasses I'd ever seen. She knew the ins and outs of the station, the schedules, and the shortcomings. As we ended our initial meeting, I made a mental note to bring her flowers because without Janice, I'd likely fall flat on my face. We toured the station, meeting the officers not out on patrol. Officer Smith, who was rarely sent into the field because he preferred the desk, had been one of the candidates for chief, and Janice told me that he'd been a grumpy asshole since the day he'd been rejected. Every officer besides him had been polite and professional, though reserved. No doubt they weren't sure what to make of me, but today I'd won Janice over, or maybe she'd won me. I was calling it a victory. "You'll meet most of the department this afternoon at shift change," she told me when we retreated back to the safety of my office. "I was planning on staying late one evening this week to meet the night shift, too." This wasn't a large station because Quincy wasn't a large town, but in total, I had 15 officers, 4 dispatchers, 2 administrators, and a Janice. "Tomorrow, the county sheriff is coming in to meet you," Janice said, reading from the notebook she'd had with her all morning. 10 o'clock. His staff is twice the size of ours, but he has more ground to cover. For the most part, their team stays out of our way, but he's always willing to step in if you need help." Good to know. I wouldn't mind having a resource to bounce ideas off of either.
"How's your head?"
Pops asked. I put my hands by my ears and made the sound of an exploding bomb. He laughed.
"You'll catch on."
"Yes, you will," Janice said. "Thank you for everything," I told her. "I'm really looking forward to working with you." She sat a little straighter. "Likewise."
"Okay, Winnie."
Pops slapped his hands on his knees.
"Let's go grab some lunch. Then I've got to get to my own office, and I'll let you come back here and settle in."
"I'll be here when you get back." Janice squeezed my arm as we shuffled out of my office. Pop simply nodded, maintaining his distance. Tonight, when I wasn't Chief Covington and he wasn't Mayor Covington, I'd head to his house and get one of his bear hugs.
"How about we eat at the Eloise?"
he suggested as we made our way outside. "The hotel?" He nodded.
"It would be good for you to spend some time there. Get to know the Edens."
The Edens, Quincy's founding family. Pops had promised that the fastest way to earn favor with the community was to win over the Edens. One of their relatives from generations past had founded the town, and the family had been the community's cornerstone ever since.
"They own the hotel, remember?"
he asked. "I remember. I just didn't realize there was a restaurant in the hotel these days. Probably because I hadn't spent much time in Quincy lately. The 6 trips I'd taken here to participate in the interview process had been my first trip to Quincy in years. 5, to be exact. But when Skylar and I had fallen to pieces and Pops had pitched the job as chief, I'd decided it was time for a change. And Quincy, well, Quincy had always held a special place in my heart.
The Edens started the hotel's restaurant about 4 years ago.
Pop said.
It's the best place in town, in my opinion.
Then let's eat. I unlocked my car. Meet you there. I followed his Bronco from the station to Main Street, taking in the plethora of out-of-state cars parked downtown. Tourist season was in full swing and nearly every space was full. Pops parked 2 blocks away from Main on a side street, and side by side we strolled to the Eloise Inn. The town's iconic hotel was the tallest building in Quincy, standing proudly against the mountain backdrop in the distance. I'd always wanted to spend a night at the Eloise. Maybe one day I'd book myself a room, just for fun. The lobby smelled of lemons and rosemary. The front desk was an island in the grand, open space, and a young woman with a sweet face stood behind the counter, checking in a guest. When she spotted Pops, she tossed him a wink. "Who's that?" I asked.
"Eloise Eden. She took over as manager this past winter."
Pops waved at her, then walked past the front desk toward an open doorway. The clatter of forks on plates and the dull murmur of conversation greeted me as we entered the hotel's restaurant. The dining room was spacious and the ceilings as tall as those in the lobby. It was the perfect place for entertaining. Almost a ballroom, but filled with tables of varying sizes, it also worked well as a restaurant.
They just put in those windows.
Pops pointed at the far wall where black-paned windows cut into a red brick wall.
Last time I talked to Harrison, he said this fall they'll be remodeling this whole space.
Harrison Eden, the family's patriarch. He'd been on the hiring committee, and I liked to believe I'd made a good impression. According to Pops, if I hadn't, there was no way I'd have gotten my job. A hostess greeted us with a wide smile and led us to a square table in the center of the room. Which of the Edens runs the restaurant? I asked as we browsed the menu card.
Knox. He's Harrison and Anne's second oldest son. Eloise is their youngest daughter.
Harrison and Anne, the parents. Knox, a son. Eloise, a daughter. There were likely many more Edens to meet. Down Main, the Eden name was splashed on numerous storefronts, including the coffee shop I wished I'd had time to stop by this morning. Last night's antics were catching up to me, and I hit a yawn with my menu.
They're good people, Pop said. You've met Harrison. Anne's a sweetheart. Their opinion carries a lot of weight around here. So does Griffin's.
Griffin. Did he say Griffin? My stomach dropped. No, this couldn't be happening. It had to be a mistake. There had to be another Griffin, one who didn't live in Quincy. I'd specifically asked him last night if he lived in town, and he'd said no. Hadn't he?
Hey, Covey.
So busy having my mental freak out that I'd slept with not only a local man, but one I needed to see me as a professional and not a backseat hookup, I didn't notice the two men standing beside our table until it was too late. Harrison Eden smiled. Griffin, who was just as handsome as he had been last night, did not. Had he known who I was last night? Had that been some sort of test or trick? Doubtful. He looked as surprised to see me as I was to see him.
Hey, Harrison. Pop stood to shake his hand, then waved at me. You remember my granddaughter, Winslow? Of course.
Harrison took my hand as I stood, shaking it with a firm grip.
Welcome. We're glad to have you as our new chief of police.
Thank you. My voice was surprisingly steady, considering my heart was attempting to dive out of my chest and hide under the table. I'm glad to be here.
Would you like to join us?
Pops offered, nodding to the empty chairs at our table.
No,
Griffin said at the same time his father said,
We'd love to.
Neither Pops nor Harrison seemed to notice the tension rolling off Griffin's body as they took their chairs, leaving Griffin and me to introduce ourselves. I swallowed hard, then extended a hand. Hello. That sharp jaw I'd traced with my tongue last night clenched so tight that I heard the crack of his molars. He glared at my hand before capturing it in his large palm.
Griffin.
Griffin Eden. My one-night stand. So much for serendipity.
Chapter 2. Griffin. Wynn. She'd told me her name was Wynn. Wynn, the sexy woman with silky dark hair, deep blue eyes, and legs for days. Wynn, the lady with Bozeman license plates. Wynn, the tourist with freckles across her nose. It happened sometimes that a tourist would stumble upon Willie's for a drink. It annoyed the fuck out of Willie, junior and senior, because neither liked outsiders in their bar. I'd considered myself one lucky bastard that I'd made the last-minute decision to swing in for a drink and pull up a stool beside Wynn. Except she wasn't Wynn. She was Winslow Covington, a name I sure as hell would have recognized. Dad had been talking about her for weeks since the hiring committee had selected her as the new chief of police. Not a tourist. Definitely not a tourist. She was supposed to be a goddamn tourist. Fuck, I muttered as the truck bumped and rolled down the gravel road toward Mom and Dad's place. You okay, Griff? Connor asked from the passenger seat in my truck. I grunted. Okay, he drawled, turning his attention to the green pasture out his window. What a fucking mess. It had been 2 days since lunch at the Eloise, and I was still pissed at myself. Winslow Covington. Not someone I should have fucked in the back seat. Maybe I should have put it together. Maybe I should have tied Win to Winslow, but Dad had spoken so highly of her and her experience that I'd pictured an entirely different woman in my mind. Someone older, someone harder, someone rougher. Win was nothing but smooth edges and unrivaled desire. 2 days and I was still struggling to fit Win to Winslow. Those preconceived notions were a bitch to erase. Dad had taken his role on the search committee as seriously as he had any job I'd seen him tackle, including managing the Eden Ranch. He was the kind of man who took every responsibility to heart, no matter how big or small. It was a trait he'd passed to me. Though the way he'd jumped into the search committee had been borderline zealous, Mom blamed boredom for his enthusiasm for a non-paying position. Since Dad had retired and handed me the reins for the ranch 3 years ago, he'd been spinning his wheels. There were other family businesses that still required his attention, like the hotel, but those mostly ran on autopilot these days. The time commitment was nothing like it was for the ranch. This land had been his priority for decades, second only to his family. Us kids were grown. The ranch was mine. He'd needed that search committee almost as much as they had needed him. I had to give my father credit. A lot of farmers and ranchers struggled to pass the baton to the next generation. I had friends from college who'd abandoned their family's operations to work a desk job simply because their parents refused to step away. Not my dad. After his retirement, he hadn't given me a single piece of unsolicited advice. If a hired hand asked him for input, Dad would send the man to me. He'd pitch in whenever I asked, but besides a few slips that first year, he'd stopped giving orders to everyone, including me. There were no critiques when I introduced a new idea, no muttered censures when I made a mistake, no guilt trips when I stopped doing something his way. I loved my father. I respected him above any other man on earth. But for fuck's sake, couldn't he have mentioned just once that Winslow Covington was a beautiful, vivacious woman who was going to turn a hell of a lot more heads than just mine? Instead, he'd praised her energy. He'd said twice that she'd outshined the other candidates. She was sharp. She had the tenacity to take the police department into the future. In my mind, I'd pictured a brawny woman with a masculine haircut and narrow nose like her grandfather's. Certainly not the bombshell who'd been sitting at Willie's. I'd been blinded by Wynne's looks, that smile, and her wit. I'd come in for one drink and thought, what the hell? When was the last time I'd seen such a stunning woman? I preferred to hook up with tourists because their time in Quincy was temporary. If she had brushed me off or not shown any interest, I would have walked away. But the desire in her gaze had matched my own. And I just had to have her. That was the most erotic night I'd had in years. Maybe ever. I clenched my jaw and tightened my grip on the steering wheel to keep myself from glancing at the back seat. Wynne's scent was gone, but it had taken all of yesterday for her sweet citrus to vanish. Now it reeked like Connor. Bless that kid and his sweat glands. He'd started working for us in high school, stacking hay bales and doing odd jobs around the ranch. He'd tried college in Missoula for a year, but after flunking out, he'd come home to Quincy. Connor was the youngest full-time employee at the ranch, and this kid moved nonstop. There weren't many men who could keep up with my stamina. At 31, I felt just as fit as I had a decade ago. But the 10-year age gap between Connor and me, combined with his work ethic, meant he could run me into the ground. He'd spent the morning cleaning out the barn by my place, and what normally took me 3 hours, he did in half that time. Sweat ringed his plaid shirt and the brim of his baseball cap. The hat was as sun-bleached as my own, the black fabric having faded to brown. The Eden Ranch brand, an E with a curve in the shape of a rocking chair's runner beneath, had once been white stitching and was now a dirty gray. Connor was a good kid. But damn, did he stink. I hated that I missed Wynn's perfume. Nice day, he said.
It is, I nodded.
Rays of pure sunlight streamed through the cloudless blue sky. The heat had already melted away the morning dew, and as we drove, I could practically see the grass growing. It was summer days like this when, as a teenager, I used to find an open field, lie down, and take a power nap. I could use one of those naps today after waking up at 4, hard and aching for the woman who'd invaded my dreams. Sleep was risky, so I'd settled for a cold shower and my fist before retreating to my home office. Paperwork had been a decent distraction, so had work in the barn. But it was moments like this, when the world was quieter, that she crept up on me again. Try as I might, there was no shoving Wynn out of my mind. Her tight body, her sweet lips, her long dark hair that had brushed over my bare chest as she'd straddled my lap and sunk down on my cock. Hell, now I was getting hard again. A relationship with her or any woman was out of the question, hence my streak of one-night stands over the past year. My focus was my family and the ranch. By the time most days ended, I barely had time for a shower before my head hit the pillow. The bachelor lifestyle suited me just fine. I answered to no one but the land. If I needed company, I had 5 siblings to call. A woman would require energy I just didn't have to spare. Tourists didn't ask for commitment. Except she wasn't a tourist. Had she known who I was at Willie's? No way. She'd looked as shocked to meet me at lunch the other day as I'd been to see her. Whatever, none of it mattered. I had no intention of repeating Sunday night. Winslow was an outsider, and though tempting, I'd keep my distance. There was work to be done. I'm going to drop you off at the shop, I told Connor. You can take the fencing truck and head out to the meadow that runs along the road to Indigo Ridge. We'll be turning out cattle into that pasture in the next few weeks, and I noticed some spots that need fixing when I was driving out there the other day. Sure thing. Connor nodded, his elbow sticking out the open window. How far should I go? As far as you can. By Friday, I'd like to have that whole area finished. Ranch headquarters remained by Mom and Dad's log house. Though my place saw more and more activity every year, the main shop and the stables would probably always be here, where Dad had built them. Call me if you need anything, I said, parking beside Mom's Cadillac. Will do. Connor hopped out, then jogged across the wide, open lot that separated my childhood home from the ranch buildings. Mom walked out of her front door as my boots hit the gravel.
Hi, Connor.
He slowed, spinning to tip his hat.
Ma'am. That boy is a dear. Has been since he was in diapers.
She smiled at me as I climbed the steps to the wraparound porch. Hi, Mom.
Hello, son. Got time for coffee, or are you already off to the next thing?
I need to keep moving, but I wouldn't say no to a travel mug.
I just brewed a fresh pot.
She waved me inside and headed straight for the kitchen. Dad sat at the island with the newspaper spread across the granite countertop. The Quincy Gazette came once a week, every Wednesday. When I'd been a kid, those weekly papers would have gone mostly unread because neither Mom nor Dad had had time to read them. Mostly, we'd used them to start fires in the wood stove. But now that Dad was retired, he spent hours poring over every printed word. Hi, Dad.
Hi there.
He straightened, taking his glasses off.
What's going on today?
There was an eagerness to his voice, like he was waiting for me to extend an invitation for a project. As much as I enjoyed time with my father, today I needed some time alone. Time to get my head straight and off a certain woman. But maybe he could save me a trip to town. Going anywhere near city limits seemed risky today.
I was hoping you might have time to run into town and pick up a bundle of steel fence posts at the farm and feed, I said. Sure.
He nodded.
I'll do it when I'm done with the paper.
He's only read it twice already.
Mom rolled her eyes from the coffee pot.
Just the one article about Winslow, he argued. The Nelsons did a piss-poor job on this one.
I stepped closer to the island, leaning in to read over his shoulder.
My gaze landed on her pretty face. The photo took up half the front page. Wynne was dressed in a black uniform shirt, the top button choking her slim neck. Her hair was pulled back into a slick knot. Her expression was the definition of neutral. The photo had to be 10 years old, maybe one taken at the academy.
They might as well have called her a child,
Dad huffed and pushed the paper my way. If the picture weren't bad enough, the article certainly didn't help. Below the headline, Quincy Chief of Police, was a column that read more like an expose on small-town politics and favoritism. No surprise, given the reporter listed was Emily Nelson. She loved to stir up drama, and when it came to the women in town who'd made it their mission to chase me, Emily was the leader of the pack. Good thing she didn't know I'd hooked up with Wynne. The article was bad enough already. Emily's parents owned the paper, and the disdain for Walter Covington was as clear as the black and white ink on each page. Are you really surprised? I asked Dad. You know the Nelsons have always hated Covey, ever since that squabble at the basketball game over the air horns. That was 7 years ago. Does it matter? It could have been 70 and they'd still hold a grudge. The Nelsons had brought 2 air horns to a high school basketball game. My younger brother Mateo had been playing as a sophomore on the junior varsity team along with the Nelsons' son. They'd run those goddamn air horns in the gymnasium for an hour straight. Finally, Walter had asked them to pipe down. Our mayor had taken the hit for everyone in the bleachers that day. The articles printed since hadn't been kind to Covey. I guess the Nelsons had no plans to be kind to Wynne, either. The article left out most of her experience, though her age had been mentioned 3 times, along with the word preferential. 30 was young for a chief of police. Had Dad not been on the hiring committee, I would have called it favoritism, too. What kind of experience could Wynne have this far into her career? If something disastrous happened, I didn't want the chief dropping the oars in the water when we'd need a steady captain at the helm. Maybe, despite a shitty delivery, Emily Nelson had a point. But since I wasn't in the mood to argue with my father, I took my coffee mug from Mom and kissed her cheek. Thanks for the refill.
Of course. She squeezed my hand. Dinner tonight? Knox isn't working at the restaurant, and Mateo doesn't have a shift at the hotel. Lila and Talia both said they could come over around 6.
What about Eloise?
She's coming over after the night clerk arrives at the hotel, probably around 7.
It was harder and harder to get us all under her roof and at the same table these days. Mom lived for the rare occasion when she could feed all 6 of her children. I'll do my best. This was a busy time on the ranch, and the idea of a family dinner already made me tired, but I didn't want to disappoint Mom. See you later. Thanks again for picking up those posts, Dad. He raised his own coffee mug, his attention rapt on the paper and a scowl fixed on his face. A calico cat darted across the porch when I stepped outside. It ducked beneath the bottom stair, and when I reached the ground, I bent to see her tucked into a corner, nurturing a chorus of tiny meows. Kittens. I'd have to take a few of them to my barn when they were weaned. Mom had at least 10 cats already, but since they kept the mice away, none of us had ever minded grabbing the occasional bag of dry cat food. I set out across the gravel, heading for the shop. The mammoth steel building was the largest on the ranch, with the barn and stables at one corner of the lot, Mom and Dad's home at the other. The shop was the 3rd corner of the triangle. Our hired hands came here to clock in and out of their shifts. My office manager and bookkeeper each had a desk here, though they both preferred to work at the office space we kept in town. My boots echoed on the concrete floor as I walked into the cavernous space. One of the swathers was parked just inside the sliding doors. "Hiya, Griff." My cousin, who worked for us as a mechanic, poked his head out from beneath the machine. "Hey, how's it coming?" "Oh, I'll get it fixed." "Good news." I'd already bought 2 new tractors this spring. I'd prefer to bump another major equipment expense to the winter. I kept walking as he went back to work on the machine. There was a mountain of office work for me to do today, either here or at home. We were short a man for the summer season, and I was a week late on getting an ad into the classifieds with the paper. Avoiding Emily was the reason, but I couldn't keep putting it off. Except one glance at my darkened office, and I turned around for the door. In total, the ranch consisted of 90,000 acres. Most days, I was more of a business manager than an actual rancher. I still wore my boots and the belt buckle I'd won from a bareback ride at a high school rodeo, but the business degree I'd earned was put to use more often than my fencing pliers. Not today. June was a beautiful month in Montana, and the blue sky beckoned. There was a cool breeze coming off the mountains, carrying the scent of pine trees and melting snow into the valley. Sunshine and sweat would do my head a lot of good. I needed a day of hard manual labor. Maybe if I exhausted myself, I'd sleep without dreaming of win. I'd just reached the tool bench, ready to load up on a fresh roll of barbed wire and galvanized post clips, when my phone rang in my jeans pocket. "Hey, Connor," I answered. "Griffin." My heart stopped at the panic in his voice, but my feet were already moving, jogging toward the shop door. "What's wrong? Are you hurt?" It's what? Talk to me. "I started at Indigo Ridge, that corner post." "Yeah." When I hit the gravel past the door, I was running. He might be young, but Connor didn't get spooked. "Connor, tell me what happened." A sob escaped his mouth. "I'm on my way," I said, but didn't end the call. Instead, I got into my truck, let my phone connect to the Bluetooth, and kept Connor on the line with me as I drove. "Breathe, Connor." A whooshed breath escaped his lungs. My foot dug into the gas pedal as I raced to the turnoff. "I'm just pulling off the gravel road," I told him, taking the two-track path that ran along the fence line. He didn't respond, other than to continue those heartbreaking, muffled sobs. The truck rattled so hard my bones felt like they were shaking loose. These roads weren't paved or smooth, just worn from the times we drove through the fields. The tracks were spotted with holes and rocks and dips. They weren't meant for anything more than 5 miles per hour. I was going 20. My stomach twisted with every passing minute. God, don't let him be hurt. If he'd cut his hand or arm or leg and was bleeding, it would take us time to get to the hospital. Too much time. And I'd sent Connor to one of the farthest ends of the ranch. Finally, 20 minutes later, I spotted the fencing truck in the distance. The mountains loomed on the horizon. "I'm here," I said, then ended the call. My tires skidded to a stop. A cloud of dust billowed from the road as I shot out of the truck and jogged toward Connor. He was seated against a tire, his knees pulled up and his head hanging between them. One arm hung loose beside him. The other had the phone pressed to his ear. "Connor," I put my hand on his shoulder, doing a quick scan. No blood. No apparent broken bones, all 10 fingers, 2 ears, and 2 booted feet. He looked up, his phone dropping to the grass. Tear tracks stained his tanned face.
"It's Lily."
"Lily?
Green,"
he choked out.
"Lily Green."
Green, one of the nurses at the nursing home where my grandmother had lived before she passed, was a Green. "What about Lily Green?" Another tear dripped down Connor's face.
"Over there."
"Over." I trailed off. And my stomach found a new bottom. No, not again. I swallowed hard and stood, knowing without asking what I was going to find. On leaden feet, I walked through the tall grass to the corner post and climbed the fence. My boots followed the same roughly trodden path that Connor must have taken. Above me, the tower of Indigo Ridge rose into the blue sky. Its bold rock face caught the sun. This place was as intimidating as it was beautiful. A solid wall of rock that cut through the fields in such a harsh line that it was like the mountain had been cleaved from top to toe. The rocks at its base were as black and harsh as the cliff's face. I climbed toward the rocks I'd avoided for ages. I hadn't been on this side of the fence in years. Not since I'd found the body. The last body. My gaze landed on a streak of blonde hair, on a white dress, on mangled limbs, on a river of blood, on Lily Green.
Chapter 3. Winslow. I'm going to run home and grab a new shirt, I told Janice, frowning at the mess I'd made of my white blouse. My sleeve, stained with black coffee, was as much of a disaster as my desk. Folders, reports, and sticky notes cluttered the brown wooden surface. Or was it gray? I hadn't seen it in 2 days. I was officially buried. When Janice had come in to tell me that it was time for the weekly staff meeting with the administration crew, an unofficial standing meeting that hadn't been on my calendar, I'd been in such a rush to join them that when I'd gone to grab my coffee mug, a blob had leapt out of the cup and splattered my shirt. "Will you call me if anything comes up?" I asked. "Of course." She smiled and walked for the door, pausing at the threshold. "You're doing great, Winslow." "Am I? Because I feel like I'm drowning." Something I'd only admit to Janice. She was my one and only ally at the station. Winning people over was going slower than I'd expected. Much slower. It was my age. No one had outwardly admitted that they thought I was too young, not to my face. But the sideways looks had held unspoken words. Doubts. I can do this job. Maybe the others doubted me, but I wasn't about to doubt myself. Much. "You're drinking from a fire hose right now, but it will get easier," Janice promised, "and the folks here will come around. Give it time." I sighed. "Thank you." She gave me a sure nod, then slipped away for her spotless desk. Taking my purse from the bottom drawer, I scanned the piles of reports to review and officer resumes to read. Tonight, I'd take another stack home and read over them like I had last night. I was in learning mode, trying to familiarize myself with the staff. I'd also had Janice pull every case file from the past 3 months so I could glean what type of crimes happened in Quincy. So far, it had been nothing more than 4 drunken drivers, a busted high school kegger, 1 bar fight, and a domestic disturbance. Janice had warned me that there was a meth arrest hidden in the mix, but I hadn't reached that file yet. Overall, the officer files were thin. Too thin. The reports were short. Too short. And everything was handwritten on paper templates. Pops hadn't been kidding when he'd told me that the Quincy Police Department needed a shove into the future. Though shove seemed too gentle a word. What we needed was a bulldozer. I was that bulldozer. Walking through the bullpen, I waved at Alan, one of the day shift officers. He nodded, his eyes darting to my sleeve. The corner of his mouth turned up. I shrugged. Coffee attacked me.
That's why I'm partial to our black shirts and pants. Hides the spills.
My uniform order is supposed to get in today. Then I'll be sticking to black shirts too. I smiled and headed for the door. Okay, that was nice. Alan hadn't avoided eye contact. Progress, right? I waved at Officer Smith when I passed him for the lobby, hoping for a nod. I'm going to run home quickly. Would you please call me if anything comes up? He ignored me, like he had for the past 2 days. Even when we'd bumped into each other in the break room yesterday, he'd acted like I hadn't even been there. The heat from his glare burned down my spine as I walked out the door. Early retirement. We were definitely going to discuss an early retirement if he didn't change his attitude. I plucked my sunglasses from my purse, using them to shield my eyes from the glare and cover up the dark circles under my eyes. Sleep hadn't been easy this week. My Durango was parked beside Alan's cruiser. The leather seats were warm and the air stuffy. I cracked my window, drawing in the scent of summer sunshine. Located in the heart of western Montana, Quincy was about an hour from Glacier National Park. The town was situated in a valley surrounded by snow-capped mountains, their slopes covered by a dense evergreen forest. The Clark Fork River cut a path through the trees and provided a natural border on one side for the city limits. Pops would take us camping along the river when I was a kid. My family would spend a few precious summer weekends at his favorite sites, where we'd fish and hike and roast s'mores. At every turn, Quincy held a memory. Visiting Pops had always felt like an adventure. My father had grown up here, and for him, Quincy was home. Mom and Dad would have loved to see me living here. They probably would have followed me from Bozeman. Though if they hadn't died, I doubted I would have moved to Quincy. If they hadn't died, a lot would be different. At every turn, Quincy held a memory. I had yet to decide if that was good or bad. Pushing the past aside, I took in the tourists meandering down the sidewalks on Main. Because of our proximity to Glacier, Quincy would be bustling until fall with out-of-town visitors. As the mayor, Pops loved the influx of cash to his small town. As a resident, the tourists tended to grate on his nerves. The abundance of visitors was the reason he loved whisking us away to the mountains for summer campouts. It had been during the fall and winter visits that we'd actually stayed in Quincy to explore. Not much had changed since my childhood. There was comfort in the familiar. As in most small Montana towns, Main Street was a segment of the highway that led in and out of town. Everything branched away from Quincy's downtown, like arteries from a thriving heart. But the bulk of the commerce was right here, all clustered together in the town's core. Restaurants, bars, and retail shops were the primary appeal for our seasonal visitors. Offices and banks filled the gaps in between. Mom's favorite stop had always been the antique shop. Dad's, the hardware store. The grocery store and two gas stations acted as the bookend to one side of Main. Quincy Farm and Feed was the other. The community took pride in this street. The window displays were artful and charming. Flower baskets hung from lampposts in summer, holiday garlands and twinkle lights in winter. I loved this town. My town. It hadn't quite sunk in yet that Quincy was mine. Maybe because I felt more akin to the tourists than the locals. I slowed at a crosswalk, waiting for a couple to navigate the intersection. Between them was a little girl wearing a yellow jumper and an adorable smile. Her parents swung her between them after every count of 1, 2, 3, yippee. Once upon a time, I'd been that little girl. What is wrong with me today? I shook my head, snapping myself out of the past. Then I took the next side street on my route to home. Mom and Dad had been a constant on my mind these past 2 days, probably because I was in Quincy, probably because so much had changed in just a week. A new house, a new job. Moving was the right decision, but that hadn't made it easy. I missed my friends in Bozeman. I missed my old department and my coworkers. Sure, I had Pops, and it was wonderful to see him every day. In time, I'd fit in here. But at the moment, being new felt a lot like being alone. Was that why I'd slept with Griffin on Sunday? I cringed for the 100th time just thinking about his face at the restaurant. Pops and Harris and Eden had chatted through the entire meal, carrying the conversation. Griffin had barely uttered a word. He'd simply sat there, glowering at his plate, while I'd forced a smile and done my best to make small talk with his father. The tension radiating off of Griffin's shoulders had grown exponentially over the meal. Regret had been so plainly written on his handsome face that I'd nearly faked a stomachache to escape. Thankfully, he'd bolted first. The moment he'd finished his club sandwich, he'd excused himself from the table. I was still mad at myself for checking out his ass as he'd walked away. With any luck, a few months would pass before we bumped into each other again. Maybe by then I'd stop thinking about his naked body in the backseat of his truck. Griffin Eden was a one-time mistake, and with any luck, not a soul in Quincy would find out I'd screwed him my first night in town. My house was a single-story Craftsman painted dove gray with white shutters. I parked in the driveway and made my way up the brick porch steps to the red front door. The door was the reason I'd bought this house. That, and because there had only been 3 places on the market. This 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom house was the perfect size for my simple life. I didn't need a large yard. The extra bedroom would become my office because I didn't need a guest bedroom. I rarely had guests. I hurried inside and ignored the disaster that was the living room. Boxes crowded the couch in the center of the room. They'd gone untouched since Sunday because I'd spent every evening since reviewing case files. My bedroom was in the same state, maybe worse. On one side of the room, 3 suitcases were open, their contents spilling onto the hardwood floors. Somewhere under this roof, there were hangers. I just had yet to find them. I dug through the closest pile of clothes, finding a new shirt, then stripped off my stained blouse, tossing it into the growing pile of laundry. My new washer and dryer were arriving on Friday. The rest of the furniture I'd ordered had been delayed, so for now, my mattress was on the floor with my wardrobe. Maybe tonight I'd search for the hangers. Maybe not. Dressed and no longer smelling like stale coffee, I hurried outside and into the Durango, reversing onto the street. Then I retreated the way I'd come toward Maine. I was slowing at the intersection when a flash of red and blue streaked by, the wail of a siren splitting the air. That was Alan's cruiser. I pulled my phone from the console, seeing nothing on the screen. He'd been doing paperwork today, not out on patrol, so where was he going? Something had happened. Why hadn't anyone called me? Instead of taking the left that would lead me to the station, I turned right, following Alan down Main. When he hit the edge of town, he punched the gas and shot down the road. My heart hammered as I hurried to keep pace, driving with one hand while dialing into the station with the other.
Quincy Police Department,
Officer Smith answered. Hi, it's Winslow, he grunted. I'm following Alan out of town. Can you tell me where he's going?
There was a call from out of town. Emergency in the mountains.
Okay. I waited for more of an explanation. He didn't give me one. What emergency?
Someone found a bomb.